So we will start with the opening remarks, and so each candidate will have an opportunity to give opening statements, and first we will go with Sheriff Clegg.
Good evening. I first would like to thank the Register Mail and NAACP for hosting this forum this evening. I thank the audience and the listening community for their participating. I've been your sheriff for 11 years. I'm seeking re-election for this position. As sheriff, I'm responsible for 720 square miles and a population of 51,000. I was born and raised in Galesburg, and in 1974 was hired by Galesburg Police Department, retiring as a lieutenant in 2007. Upon my retirement, I had a real desire to bring my knowledge and experience to a much broader area, that being the citizens of Knox County. My wife, Debbie, and I have been married for 15 years and reside in Galesburg. I participate in numerous boards, committees, of which I'm only going to name a handful. Local 911 Board, appointed by Governor Quinn and reappointed by Governor Rauner to sit on the 911 Oversight Board in Springfield. Recently appointed by Governor Rauner to sit on the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board, Springfield. Past chairman of the Mobile Training Unit 4, which I will explain later. Past chair of the Peoria Multi-County Drug Enforcement Group, better known as MEG in Peoria. Past interim director for the MEG unit in Peoria. Board of directors of the Illinois Sheriff's Association, which is elected by sheriffs. Vice president, currently vice president of the Illinois Sheriff's Association, which again is elected by the sheriffs. In February 2019, I'll be the president of the Illinois Sheriff's Association. I'm also a legislative committee member in Springfield. On a national level, member of the National Sheriff's Association, member of Homeland Security Committee, member of Congressional Affairs Committee, past member of Inter-Threat Assessment Group, better known as ITAC-G. I represented 3,200 sheriffs at that time. Counterpart, Rich Stanek, sheriff in Hennepin County, which is Minneapolis, represented the 12 major sheriff's department. We had monthly meetings in Washington, to include the FBI director, Homeland Security director, and NSA National Security Advisor director. Graduated from the FBI Academy, Session 215, graduated from the National Sheriff's Institute, and I am a member of the National Joint Terrorism Task Force in Washington, D.C. It is my honor and privilege to continue serving you as your sheriff of Knox County. Thank you.
Mr. Canfield?
Well, thank you. My name is Kip Canfield, and I was born and raised in Galesburg, and my father was a Galesburg police officer and also a Knox County sheriff's deputy back in the 50s and 60s, so I really have been around it most of my life. After graduating in 1978 from Galesburg High School, in 1979 I went to the United States Army as a military policeman. I was stationed in Turkey and Fort Meade, Maryland. I obtained a top-secret sensitive compartment information security clearance, which I have used as recent as 2014. After being honorably discharged from the Army, I married my wife, Becky Canfield. Well, Becky Sotelo at that time. We've been married 35 years. We have two daughters and six grandchildren. We are still living in Galesburg. One of our daughters lives in Nebraska. The other one's here in town. So after the military, after getting married, I started my civilian career at Monmouth PD, was there for 2 years, started in Galesburg PD in 1986, retired in 2006 as a sergeant. I then was recruited by a company to go to Amman, Jordan, to train Iraqi policemen in the Syrian desert. Did that, came back in 2007. I was recruited by another company to go into Afghanistan to work with Afghan police. Came back 2008, went one more time back into Baghdad, Iraq, and after 3 years, my wife said that was enough, so I stayed. January of 2010, I was hired by the city of Galesburg to supervise the Neighborhood Enhancement Division. After doing that for 3 years, Carl Sandburg College job came open. I applied for that and now am the Director of Public Safety and also the Risk Manager. So in 2013, after 8 months there, I got another phone call asking if I wanted to go back to Afghanistan. Went back for one more year to work with Afghan police. Came back, And Sandberg was very nice, gave me a leave of absence. So I'm still with the Carl Sandburg College as their Director of Public Safety and Risk Manager. I'm an avid Cardinal fan. Don't know if that loses me votes or not. But so been on American Red Cross Board, been on the Rescue Mission Board, been on the Crime Stoppers Board. So my name is Kip Canfield. I'm running for Knox County Sheriff, and I would appreciate your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. The first question is actually just a general question that will come from Rebecca.
Thank you, Devon. Oh,
is this on? It's on now.
Thank you, Devon.
There we go.
First question is to Mr. Canfield. What would you do in your first 90 days as sheriff?
Well, the first 90 days, you're going to see a change in at least how the sheriff looks. Okay? I'm going to be a sheriff that wears a uniform. You're going to see me plugged in to the deputies, the jailers, the courthouse folks. I think it's very important that they see that their sheriff is one of them. They will see that I will patrol in a marked vehicle. I understand there's administrative duties that a sheriff needs to do, but also there's legal duties that a sheriff can do. So a sheriff needs to be out in the towns, out on the highways, out on the byways, because I find it hard to believe that 8 hours is administrative. So that's one thing you'll see. Another thing you'll see is hopefully the budget. You'll see at least the overtime budget start to take a less hit. Because right now, with personnel being short, overtime is constantly a problem, which tells me that if you're allowed, just throw a number out, if you're allowed 40 people and you only have 38, you got to hire. That's going to take care of the overtime budget. Also, the sick time is huge. So there's got to be a problem. People can't be sick that much. There's got to be either a I don't want to go to work problem, or there's something going on. So when you can take care of that one issue in the budget, then I think you'll see things starting to change. And in 90 days, I think I can get that accomplished. Thank you.
Next question is to Mr. Clegg. What would you do in your first 90 days in your new term as sheriff if reelected?
I would continue what I'm doing now. Contrary to what is believed, the overtime is out of sight. There's no doubt about it. When you are mandated by a union contract to provide 5 correctional officers per shift, and one calls in sick, another one's on vacation, you have to jump into overtime in order to be compliant with the union contract. We just recently hired 4. Now, granted, that one individual can step right in. The other 3 will have to go to 5 weeks of training school. And really, the benefit will not really hit us for another 8-9 months. On patrol, I've always been taught as an administrator, you have to look at the overall picture neutral. If I'm involved in patrol and I become involved in an arrest, I become involved in observing one of my deputies making an arrest and getting into a fight, my vision is going to be tainted. Therefore, my eyes are open as an administrator. And trust me, there's enough work administratively to keep you in that office 12 hours a day. Thank you.
Thank you. The next set of questions will be addressing managing the department.
Sheriff Clegg. This question is for Sheriff Clegg. How well do you feel the sheriff's department is currently being run?
I think right now it's being ran excellently. The staff that I have underneath me, from the captain down to the sergeants, are very receptive. They're receptive on the ideas that I have promoted, and we're doing an excellent job. And that filters down to the patrol division as well as correctional officers. You know, we're all short-helped. Patrol, we're short-helped by 1 right now. It's very difficult in today's society, especially advertising for a job in law enforcement, for people to come forward and say, I want to join. Back in the day of 1974 when I applied for Galesburg, there was 122 applicants. We're lucky now to get anywhere from 6 to 8. So the pool is very selective, and by the time they complete a background, that pool is usually cut in half. I think right now the overall department is running superbly, allowing me to do the administrative job, allowed me to work on the budget, allows me to attend some of these board meetings that will help on the other side as far as teaching, as far as promoting new ideas. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Canfield, how well do you feel this sheriff's department is currently being run?
Well, I think the folks that are doing the job are doing a good job. I think there's more that can be done. Once again, I've talked to a lot of people, and people want to see more patrols on the street. If you're only allowed a certain amount of people, the only other people you have are command people. My idea is command people can also patrol, and maybe it's not making traffic stops, maybe it's not getting in those fights, but when you see a vehicle, a law enforcement vehicle on the road, that's patrol. When you see that, that's a deterrent. That's what needs to be out there more. And if it takes the sheriff, if it takes a captain, or if it takes a lieutenant or a sergeant, if that's the extra folks you have, then those are the ones who will get in a vehicle and go to these towns. Doesn't mean you have to take a criminal damage report. Doesn't mean you have to make an arrest. But that is what has to be done. If you need people, you put people back on the street that might be in an administrative role but are still law enforcement. When you look at law enforcement, we all started out at the same thing, and that's police, patrolmen, deputies. And as you get promoted, doesn't take that away. So we need to plug those people back into the street and make the sheriff's department better than what it is right now. Thank you.
This one goes to Mr. Canfield first. How would you improve racial diversity among your staff?
Well, recruiting first is the big issue. I've been at Carl Sandburg College for 6 years, and we have job fairs, and not once, and maybe I missed it, not once have I seen a Knox County Sheriff's person there to recruit. We have a large criminal justice program at Carl Sandburg College. So you get plugged into there. ICC, Blackhawk, Springfield, Macomb all have job fairs. If you want to recruit, you have to go where they are. Springfield now is about a 2-hour drive, no problem. You can get there and get back. But you have to send somebody to recruit. It's a problem. There is a problem. But if you've tapped everything that is here locally, you're only as good as the app pool that you get. So you have to go find them. And if you have to start in the grade schools, having students look at a career in law enforcement, then that's what we have to do. I remember as a kid, people like Jesse Perez, Bill Heron, they came to the schools and started police cadets. And I was one of them. Now, whether that bent me towards a career in law enforcement, I don't know. But I do remember that. So you have to go where the people are. You have to recruit them actively. And it just doesn't stop at one job fair. You continue on. Thank you.
And for you, Mr. Clegg, how would you improve racial diversity among your staff?
I don't believe there's any racial diversity. In fact, we've got a policy prohibiting that. Racial profiling is not tolerated in Knox County Sheriff's Department. Knox County Sheriff's Department Standard Operation Procedure, General Order 87, discrimination, it states discrimination, shall not be exercised in any manner by any employee against or in favor of any person or persons because of the individual's political, religious opinions, affiliations, or because of race, creed, color, religion, national origin, sex, or sexual preference. A violation of this order may result in termination. As I mentioned previously, we just recently hired four. Two out of the four are of color, which then increases our current diversified employees of six people of color. So I think we have been moving in the right direction and will continue doing so. Getting back to patrol, you know, it's pretty tough to ignore a car accident if I'm in a patrol car. Yep, I can't take it. Sorry. You know, that doesn't speak very good of the county sheriff's department. Our men and women of patrol division, they respond. They do an excellent job with the shortage of manpower that we currently have. That shortage, there is such a thing called a budget that limits personnel expenditures. And once you hit that, we've got a problem, and we're very close to it now. Thank you.
This question goes to Mr. Clegg first. How would you conduct yourself on social media as a public official?
Wow. I can relate to two things for myself. I have a personal account and a political account. And I know that according to our policies, that if I act inappropriately on either one, I stand a huge chance of never standing before you folks again, both on the political side as well as the personal side. The reason why I got involved in Facebook to begin with was every night I'd say to the wife, well, what are you doing? I'm looking at these pictures, or I'm looking at this for sale, and that got me going. So I haven't looked at it now for about 3 days and hope I can do it again for another 3 days. But, you know, we have internally a dedicated investigator that works 8 hours a day of nothing but surfing the media. And the primary reason for that is the child predators out there. And he has done an outstanding job, outstanding enough that the Attorney General's office hired him to do the same job for her in Springfield. We have now replaced that position with another detective. The first case that he worked, the young victim girl here in Knox County, the perpetrator was in Finland. And it just doesn't stop there. You know, I had seen it on TV of a small community in Iowa where they were arresting for the third arrest in a short period of time a child perpetrator. And I thought, boy, if it's going on in such a small community, what do we have here? And what I've been told by that investigator, there's enough work to go around that we can have four full-time investigators doing nothing but that. Thank you.
And Mr. Canfield, how would you conduct yourself on social media as a public official?
Okay. Well, I have 2 minutes, so I want to respond back to the last question. My understanding of that question was racial diversity, not racial profiling. So I just want to put that out there. I answered the diversity question. So social media can either be a scourge or a tool. So if you use it as a tool, it can be a big recruitment tool. It can be an informational tool. If I get elected, I'm saying my personal Facebook page will go away, and it'll be the Knox County Sheriff's Facebook page that I will be involved in. It will give you information. It will give you tips, and we'll use it as that tool to make the county better and to get our information out. It's free. If you use it correctly, it's good. If you use it poorly, it'll come back to attack you. So you'll see mine go away, and you'll see the Knox County Sheriff's Facebook page be enhanced. Thank you.
Mr. Canfield, what is your position on the time clock issue in Knox County?
I agree with the time clock issue. I agree that the taxpayers are owed that. I believe that the courthouse and the jail would go to a time clock issue. But I want to let the taxpayer know that a patrol deputy, if he takes a car home, as soon as he gets in that car and he radios dispatch, which is at the public safety building, telling them that he is ready to work, that dispatcher will enter that time, and in essence, he just punched the time clock. What the taxpayers don't want is for a deputy to get into a car and then have to drive all the way to where the time clock is, punch that time clock to start. He starts when he radios dispatcher, and that'll happen from the sheriff on down to the newest deputy. So when that person starts their shift, dispatch will be their time clock. But I think the taxpayers are owed what we do and how much time we put in. So I agree with it, and you will see it happening if I'm elected. Thank you.
Sheriff Clegg, what is your position on the time clock issue in Knox County?
I'll make a very quick statement for a previous question. I urge everybody to go to the website knoxcountysheriffil.com. You'll be surprised at the information that's on there. Recruiting, applications, so on and so forth. So keep that in mind. My issue with the time clock is that over 20 years ago, the Knox County Board at that time installed time clocks to the Sheriff's Department. Within 3 months, that same county board stopped doing it. The overtime is costing us thousands. That's what you would have here. Patrol, Mr. Canfield's 100% right. The best time clock is that dispatch. That record stays there forever. Corrections, courthouse, with corrections, you never know what you're about to walk into. And typically on first shift, there is so much administrative work going on as far as making arrangements for court, to transport federal prisoners to other jurisdictions, to transport in-state criminals back to Knox County or to the Department of Corrections. The overtime would be outrageous. We have a lot of dedicated men and women that when it comes time to quit, they will sit there and finish maybe a 10-minute report. If they are punching a time clock, as soon as they leave and they punch it, that registers that they've worked overtime and therefore are going to be paid. So we all acknowledge the fact the time, overtime, is out of control, and it is. It's going to be twice as bad when you start having individuals that are trying to give the county 100% of their job punching time clocks. We're either going to not do the report, put it off for a day or two, or we're going to do the report and pay overtime.
This question, the first one goes to Mr. Clegg. As county sheriff, what is your relationship with the city?
I think the chief was here. I think it's a good relationship. I know we have worked not only upon their call for backup on certain circumstances, but they've also assisted us. The investigators for the Sheriff's Department hold a monthly intelligence meeting, of which Galesburg is a part of. I think jointly there's opportunities there to work narcotics together, which we have. A good case would be Amtrak station. The other thing is working burglaries together, which we had stumbled across many burglaries, which the majority of the victims resided in Galesburg. Galesburg assisted. So the working relationship is very good.
And for you, Mr. Canfield, as county sheriff, what would your relationship be with the city?
I would like to make one comment real quick. I went to that Sheriff's Department website, and there's nothing but outdated information on there. So you have to you're only as good as your website, okay? So the working relationship, that's not what I'm hearing. Now, maybe from investigators it's good, but from patrol it's not good. What I would like to see is we have a shared training budget. Because if something happens in one of the schools outside of Galesburg, we're going to have to draw from Galesburg for assistance. If they don't know what we do and we don't know what they do because there hasn't been any shared training, then we're going to have a problem. So if I'm sheriff, not only Galesburg, but Abington, Knoxville, Williamsfield, any place with a police department, we will cross-train. And if they have a high school, we will go in to that high school together and form a plan. But you can't do that if you don't have a relationship with that police department. So thank you.
Mr. Canfield, describe how you can promote an understanding of diversity throughout your staff if elected.
Well, diversity, if you're talking about profiling, is that what the question is?
No, more so just how would you promote an understanding of diversity among your staff if elected?
The biggest thing is training. If you go into a department and ask them, when was the last time you had diversity training? Some of them may not be able to tell you when. But if you don't keep it in front of people, then it's going to slip away. Now, maybe a 8-hour class once a year and an online training for the officers as a continual education, that's good. But people have to understand that there's other entities out here that they can get plugged into that will assist them if they feel that they've been wronged. NAACP is a great one. So when you look at diversity in the police department, if an officer has taken a step too far, there are ways to fix that. Okay, one is training. The biggest thing is training. If you don't have it, you lose it. There used to be a thing here, and I think we did it once a year, was called Not in Our Town. And it was a great thing. But it happened once. And then we just kind of had the fuzzy feeling, and it all went away. And I kept saying, we have to continue this. Just because that group left, we still have to keep it in front of people. So, not to beat a dead horse, but you need training and it needs to be constant. Thank you.
And Mr. Clegg, how would you promote an understanding of diversity among your staff if reelected?
I would definitely agree that training is a necessity. I think the Illinois Law Enforcement Standard or Training and Standard Board is mandating diversity training every year for every officer, no matter where. It starts from the top, you know, and if the employees see and recognize that there's diversity within that leader, that he or she is not going to tolerate anything other than respect because we're all human beings. I believe, too, that in the event that that one person does take a wrong step, the sheriff will know about it quickly, because I believe right now everybody that is employed at the sheriff's department is strongly opposed to any ill feelings when it comes to diversity, and they should. But again, it starts at the top, and I think training is of the utmost.
Thank you. Now we will move to a section on operating the jail.
Sheriff Clegg, what is your plan to make the jail facility safe for employees and inmates?
Well, you're 100% right. The safety of employees and inmates, and I think most people tend to forget that an inmate has every right. And he has a right of expectation of safety. So what's been done so far? When I first came into office, we may have had 2 or 3 cameras in the back in the booking area. We are now at 42 and in hopes of installing about 12 more. What that has done is help stop fights. Not 100%, but it helps to stop the fights because they know they're on camera. Even if they get stopped, even if the fight is stopped before a correctional guard gets to them, They also know that they're going to be charged with a criminal offense. Very simple. That's never been done in the past. That word travels amongst inmates. Two very important things. We annually are inspected by the Department of Corrections. We have had zero violations in the 11 years I've been sheriff. We also house federal inmates, which also, unannounced, we have Bureau of Prison come in and do an inspection. And these inspections aren't just to come in and say, hi, how are you, and they leave. They're there for several hours. Zero violations. What we've also done to help curb some of the fighting is to, at one time, at the beginning, we have two floors, two tiers. We would allow everybody out in the day room at one time. Now what we've done is one tier is locked down while the other tier is out. When the top tier goes back in, the bottom comes out. That has helped immensely. We have a PREA, at the time of booking, PREA, Prison Rape Elimination Act. We try to determine whether that person is a violent offender that could cause an act or could be a victim of a sexual act while in prison. And I can keep on going, but the time is out. Thank you.
Mr. Canfield, what is your plan to make the jail facility safe for employees and inmates?
Okay, thank you. I think what you're hearing, the hot topic right now, is the mental health issue. And every prisoner has a right to mental help if they so ask for it. And I think that's where you're going to get a bulk of your problems is from people who need help. Now, the 708 Fund was created to help get mental help to people. But the sheriff went back and asked for another $75,000 on top of an already contract. I've talked with several people who are trained counselors, certified, that have asked if they can volunteer their time to come in. You keep the contract for the mental health, but you use people that are willing to volunteer. They're licensed, they're certified, and they want to help, and all they want is a couple hours a week. So when you look at where your problems are, most of them are people that have mental health issues to begin with. So if you want to stay safe, you get your jailers trained in identifying those problems, getting them reported. I think that takes care of probably 75% of your problems. And you can help them and help your people stay safe. Thank you.
Actually, you'll have an opportunity because the next question is actually on mental health. So, absolutely.
And I know you just touched on this a bit, but our next question, Mr. Canfield, is what is needed to address mental health issues at the Knox County Jail?
Well, my understanding is there's already a contract for a person to come in weekly. And once again, you use some volunteers that are willing to come in and monitor these people. Now, they're not going to be able to issue medications or whatever is needed, but they are trained. They can talk to people. They can help them, and they can get them moving. So, once again, training of your jailers to identify folks who need help, get them the help that they need, get the people in there that can do the job, give that money back to Bridgeway, who can catch mental health issues at a young age before they even get into the legal system. Let them run it. They're the experts. Take that money, give it back to Bridgeway, and let's use some volunteers. And if it doesn't work, then we move on. But you have to use the resources that are given to you and let the professionals use the resources for what they do. Thank you.
And Mr. Clegg, what is needed to address mental health issues at the Knox County Jail?
Last year, our daily inmate population was 143. Out of that 143, 31% were diagnosed to have some form of mental health issue. Now, mental health issue is a wide, wide span. It can be alcoholism. It can be using narcotics. It can be a whole host of things. It's very broad. Contrary to what Mr. Canfield is leading the group to believe that I've requested another $75,000, the 708 board was formed this year, and they started with their grant preparation, which I applied for $75,000. $75,000 to provide the Sheriff's Department with a licensed psychiatrist. Now, what is not known, which I didn't know either, that when that psychiatrist comes into the building and 15 people have signed in to see her, she's mandated by law to stay there until all 15 have been seen. So obviously the expense, hourly expense, you know, she's maybe for 2 hours, and she's got a five-hour load with 15 people signed up. So it becomes very expensive. We have tried outside cooperation with mental health, you know, at 2 a.m. in the morning, and you've got somebody that is going ballistic back there. You need something then. You need something instead of 8 hours later, somebody shows up to talk. So since this has been employed with the 708 board and more hours increased to the psychiatrist, it has helped immensely. It's unbelievable. And I'm in hopes of reapplying. I haven't gone to it yet, but reapplying next year. Because I think that is what every jail needs, and that is the problem with every jail, every correctional facility within the state of Illinois. Thank you.
Thank you. The next set of questions will be on enforcement.
Mr. Clegg, what is your position on drug enforcement at the Amtrak station?
I feel that even though 9 times out of 10, if a seizure is made, that typically it's not going here, it's going elsewhere. In the past, it's always been Pittsburgh. And what we have done in return is notified DEA. They quickly show up, and they make the decision whether or not to pursue any investigative techniques in Pittsburgh. Even though that individual's been arrested here, the information that that person has provided typically can assist in narcotic seizures elsewhere. And I don't care if it's here. I don't care if it's in New York City. We have a huge drug problem in the United States, and if we can help take a little bit of that away, I'm all for it.
And Mr. Canfield, what is your position on drug enforcement at the Amtrak station?
I agree that drugs are a problem, but so far, basically, what we've seen at the Amtrak station is marijuana seizures. Okay? Marijuana is against the law. But we have a crystal meth and a heroin problem that's crossing the river from Burlington and killing our young people. That's where our drug efforts need to be put. Not having an officer, a deputy, at the train station. Okay, you pick off some marijuana, great. But that's not where our focus needs to be. Our focus needs to be what's harming this county. And I remember a police chief, when we were doing Neighborhood Watch, would say, it's your job, Neighborhood Watch, to get that person out of your neighborhood if they're causing a problem. Then it's that neighborhood's problem to do the same thing. It's the same thing with marijuana seizures at the train station. If they're not destined for here, then that's Pittsburgh's problem. And I'm sorry to say that, but we got other problems in this county that are killing people. That's where our efforts need to go. Thank you.
Mr. Canfield, how active should Knox County be in drug forfeiture proceedings?
Very active. If you get a drug seizure that has a large amount of cash, yes, you're going to reap that benefit. That's what you need to go after. The county, if somewhere down the line a crystal meth bust is made or a heroin and there's money seized, you go after it. Monmouth seen the airplane where they had the gentleman come in with a large amount of cannabis. You seize that airplane, you know, you can put that into the forfeiture if you can get it. But every time that somebody has money and it's been used in drug sales, then we need to seize that because it's really pure profit on the good side, not the bad side. And I know there's a split, and I know there's things you have to do with it, but still, it's better than zero and letting that stuff move through. So I believe you go after it, and you go after it hard. Thank you.
Sheriff Clegg, how active should Knox County be in drug forfeiture proceedings?
Well, I think we're very active, but I want to get one thing straight very quickly. An investigation is not geared solely for the purpose of seizing money. Forfeiture is a tool that can be utilized, and it's a very valuable tool. And the reason for using forfeiture is to remove from criminals the instruments and profits from their crimes. It's more difficult for a criminal to commit crimes if the things that they use to make it easier to commit their crimes are taken away, which makes total sense, and that was the purpose. In fact, I think the history of forfeiture goes back to before Christ. In the Bible, it talks about it, about an ox. Then even as recently as this year, the law has changed once again with forfeitures regarding money and became effective July 1st, and it will another portion of it become effective January 1st of 2019. We do utilize forfeitures. The money or the properties that are seized, there's heavy restrictions on what that can be used for law enforcement. We can't go out and throw a birthday party for Dave Clegg. So there's a lot of restrictions. You know, you can seize currency, bank accounts, safety deposit box, international accounts, houses, aircraft I did seize, boats, motors, anything that's linked to criminal activity, and that's the case. You have to prove criminal activity. So the burden is upon law enforcement to prove to the judge that there's a criminal element involved here. We are not, in essence, doing anything with the suspect of the crime. It's a civil procedure where we are actually going after the money. The money is the person that will speak up in court. So I feel that it's very, very instrumental, and if it can help pay for that MAG agent salary, then that's what it should be used for. Thank you.
And Mr. Clegg, how will you address cases of racial profiling brought to your attention?
Well, I think, as it was pointed out, I probably jumped the gun, but we have check and balances within our system, within our department. And the biggest thing is the General Order 87, discrimination. It states, discrimination shall not be exercised in any manner by any employee against or in favor of any person or persons because of the individual's political or religious opinions or affiliations, or because of race, creed, color, religion, national origin, sex, or sexual preference. A violation of this nature can result in termination. Approximately 4 years, Illinois enacted a law to determine whether law enforcement was involved in racial profiling. So what they did, if you are issued a traffic citation, one of the pages on the back side, there's a form for law enforcement to fill out. It doesn't ask what nationality or color that officer is, but it specifically asks the color of the individual stopped. And whether it's a moving violation or a warning, that ticket is mailed into Springfield. 4 years ago, the law was enacted. It was supposed to sunset within 1 year. It is still going on today. What they ended up coming back with was Dave Clegg is driving and sees Sally walking her dog, and he wants to get out and just say hi. Anything going on? How's everything for you? I have about a five-minute report that I have to fill out and submit to Springfield as well. That contradicts community policing, in my opinion. I sat down with several politicians last spring in Springfield, and we discussed that. Most of them did not know that that bill was still going on. They have not compiled the data to determine, and law enforcement is very eager to find out if we are profiling, and if we are, we need to take measures to stop it.
And for you, Mr. Canfield, how will you address cases of racial profiling brought to your attention?
There's several national numbers that support that racial profiling is going on currently. But I look at it as a twofold problem. The first side is the victim or the civilian side. The other side is the police side. I've been to several meetings when I was on the police department, whether it was Neighborhood Watch or some city organization that we were meeting with. And there was always a person that said, I had a bad experience with the police. And we asked them. And it was 10 years ago. So for 10 years, that person harbored that feeling. My point to them is, when you feel it happens, you have to report it. Now, whether it's making that phone call to the duty officer, whether it's making that phone call to the NAACP, or whether it's making that phone call to the Human Relations Commission. But it has to be reported right now. On the police side of it, officers need to be trained in how to respond to different scenarios. And if the officer isn't trained, then he isn't going to be held accountable. But if he is trained, then he will be held accountable. But it has to be reported first. And I believe the NAACP doesn't go out and solicit these things. You have to come in and make that report. So my point is, if you feel it has happened to you, that you were racially profiled on anything, you need to report it right now. And then let the system work. Because there's other places, there's other things in place that if you don't get satisfaction from the police department, there's other avenues for you to go. So thank you.
Thank you. The next set of questions will be general issues. And as a reminder, thank you, Tom, if there's anyone in the crowd that has questions that they'd like to have answered after about 7 o'clock, after the hour, we will go through those questions and ask as many as we possibly can.
I'll go ahead and pick them up now.
Thanks.
Mr. Canfield, what is your stance on body cameras?
Body cameras are a great tool as long as nothing's happening. But if something happens, you ever seen a body cam video when an officer's running? Have you ever seen a body cam video when he's in a scuffle? So what then you rely on is his lapel mic. At least Galesburg Police, and I believe Knox County Sheriff's Department, has dash cams. So dash cams will catch a certain angle. If that officer leaves that scene, he still has his lapel mic. Body cams to get something started could be around $180,000 to $200,000. Who's going to pay that? If we rely on the tools that we have and the training that we have and the information that we have on what body cams do and do not do, then I think the system we have right now in place is sufficient until something better comes along. Once again, body cams are a great tool, but they're only as great as the video they can shoot. So rely on that mic, because also body cams in a scuffle can come unplugged. Mics can come unplugged or can be flopping, but you're still going to hear something. So that's what we need to look at and wait for technology to catch up to where we can have a better quality view or something different. But right now, body cams are very expensive, and I don't know if they give the taxpayers what they're looking for. So thank you.
And Mr. Clegg, what is your stance on body cameras?
You know, I'm an advocate of body cameras, but I think there has to be some tweaking done before we get into it. You know, a question, a concern that I have expressed in Springfield is, I'm the officer and I'm responding to a domestic violence call, domestic battery inside of a residence. I have a body camera on, and that's activated. So as I'm walking throughout your house, I'm basically going to be giving somebody the opportunity to get the blueprints of your house. All they have to do is file a FOIA, and we have to turn that information over to them. I don't think it's going to be your next-door neighbor. It's probably going to be a burglar hoping to be able to get that and break into that house and take whatever. Body cameras that we've looked at, you know, Kip is a tall gentleman. I'm shorter than Kip. Where you put your body camera, you know, say I'm 6'4" and I put it up here, I'm going to be shooting over the head of everybody. So it doesn't do any good. But if I'm only 5'5" and I've got it up here, I'm going to be hitting the belly button of most men. So it really doesn't serve a purpose. For the cost that it is, right now the biggest expense is the server. The server by far is the most expensive. But so far what we have found, the better quality in a server is about $3,200 per unit. Now that is the cost of the body cam as well as a portion of that server. Because majority of the time, that tape has to be retained almost forever. So I think there needs to be some work done by the General Assembly. And once that is, I think we'd probably be the first ones in line to get them. Thank you.
This question is for Sheriff Clegg. What is your understanding of the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, they're movement is for the betterment of blacks, in my opinion. You know, unfortunately, they sometimes create a problem where they're on TV constantly, which I'm sure is not what they want. But to make a Black Lives Matter is by far a great cause for anybody, whether it's Black Lives Matter or whether it's Dave Clegg, we all are people. We all are humans. We all should be able to sit down with somebody of a different color and talk. And if that's what they're promoting, my hat's off to them because it needs to be promoted.
Mr. Canfield, what is your understanding of the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, I'd just like to go back to the body cam question real quick again. If body cams did come along, I don't want anybody to think that someone can get a blueprint of your house based on that. That's part of the funding that goes with this, is there's somebody that has to do that, and they can redact certain things. If you have a child in there, they're not going to release that information with your child's face plastered all over the place. There's certain things you can redact, and that will come with body cams also. So, Black Lives Matter. When a black man cannot walk down the street in America and not get the police called on him, we have a problem. When two black men go into a Starbucks and wait for a meeting and have the police called on them, we have a problem. So one of the nicest, well, not nicest, one of the greatest things I've seen on the internet on Black Lives Matter was a young black male had a sign and it said, "I never said only Black Lives Matter." And when you hear that and you see that, you can't help but get behind what Black Lives Matter stands for. I agree with it. There's a problem. And it seems like whenever there's a gulf between minorities and police, and it seems like when we start to get that gulf to collapse down, something happens. And it either goes back to where it was or it's worse. So by keeping things in front of people, by Black Lives Matter keeping their message going, it stays in front of you. And I believe that we all can agree with their message. So thank you.
And this one goes to you first, Mr. Canfield. How does your political ideology influence your decision making?
When I announced that I was running for sheriff, I made a statement that I said, I hope people don't look at me as a Republican or Sheriff Clegg as a Democrat, but we are local politicians. I agree with Democrats on the county board. I agree with Republicans on the county board. My goal is to work with them. My goal is to make the county better, whether you're a Republican or Democrat. My national politics have nothing to do with me running for Knox County Sheriff. It plays no part, but unfortunately, we have to choose, and I'm a Republican. So it will not play in anything that I do or decide. If the Knox County Board, a Democrat, comes up with an idea that's going to help the Sheriff's Department and I agree with it, I'm going with it. So, Republican or Democrat, we need to work together for the good of the county. So thank you.
And Mr. Clegg, how does your political ideology influence your decision making?
Quick answer, zero. I too, much like what Mr. Canfield is saying, I don't care if you're Republican, Independent, or Democrat. If there is an idea that is doable for the Sheriff's Department, it would be looked into. It's unfortunate that this position is constitutionally appointed. And it's unfortunate that you have to declare Democrat or Republican, because I think it should be just a vote from the public of two individuals. Forget the sides, the R's and the D's. And I think for the most part, even at a little higher on the Springfield level, it's somewhat that way also. I've sat down with many Republicans just recently with Senator Weaver. You know, we've discussed some issues. He's very supportive. I'm supportive of him. I'm a Democrat. I think we all have good ideas. And again, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. If they're good ideas, we need to look into it and hopefully adopt them. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both of you. That ends our panelist questions. And now we will have questions from the audience. But I'd like to actually just give both of them a round of applause just for the first section. It is a forum, but you've got two people that are passionate, so it got a little chippy there, but, you know, y'all know, y'all know. Y'all are here too, y'all are here too. Okay. I hear you laughing, Candy. Six. We got six. I'm trying to be serious. All right. Number one. This will go to you first, Sheriff Clegg. In doing your job, prioritize these: following the law, citizens' interest, protecting officers, protecting inmates' rights. Explain your reasoning. I will repeat that. In doing your job, prioritize these: following the law, citizens' interest, protecting officers, and protecting inmates' rights. And explain your reasoning. You have 2 minutes.
First one would be following the law. Second one would be to protect the inmates' rights. Third one, protect the officer. And the fourth is the citizen. Fill in the blank, please. Following the law, I believe that if you follow the law, everything else will fall into place. So if I'm concerned about the inmates' rights, following the law is going to take care of that. And it will take care of all of those situations. So first and foremost is following the law.
Thank you. Same question for you, Mr. Canfield. In doing your job, prioritize these: following the law, citizens' interest, protecting officers, and protecting inmates' rights, and explain your reasoning.
Well, I agree that number one is following the law. I think number two is the way it's worded is protecting the officer. Number three, protecting the inmates' rights. And then four is the citizens' interest. And my reasoning is, of course, if you don't follow the law, then you have a major problem. Second one is protecting the officer. To me, that means protect him from being injured. Protect him from being hurt. If a victim's, if a inmate's rights are violated, he's not hurt. Now, we may have a problem in court later down the road, but he's going to be okay. So I have to protect the officer's, then the inmate's rights, and then the citizen's interests. I like how that was worded, was your interests. Not that they're the last, they're important, but we can talk about those during the course of the day. So, one, follow the law, two, protect the officer, three, inmates' rights, and then four, interests of citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Number two, this will go to you first, Mr. Canfield. What can we do about the gun violence? And then there's another part. How can I feel safe again going out by myself or taking my hand? Taking my hands out, ruling from the back table. Did you guys?
Well, first one, I understand. Can I?
Yeah, we'll go with that one. So, how can we? What can we do about the gun violence, and how can I feel safe again?
Well, We do have concealed carry in the state of Illinois, and I don't believe that's the answer to stay safe. I'm not a big concealed carry fan. I just think it's another gun that is out at a scene that could be taken away. I don't know if it gives you a false sense of security or not, but the gun violence will never go away because the criminals aren't going to pay attention to it. I walked into a bank and had seen the big sign with the gun with the red line through it. I've never seen a bank robber turn around and say, "Can't go in there." So it's something that is always going to be with us. And it is the law. Concealed carry is the law, and that's your right. And that's how you want to do it, then fine. But I've been shot at in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I don't care if you're the best shot on a range. You could pump 300 rounds down a range and hit that target bullseye, but that target doesn't shoot back. So I've seen what happens when another round is coming towards you. So I don't know if a person with concealed carry would be ready for that. I've seen videos of, I've seen one that was actually at a off-betting place, and they came in to rob the place, and two of them had guns. And you could see a gentleman at the end of the seats was looking down. All of a sudden, he pulls out a gun and starts shooting. He emptied his magazine. Didn't hit one of them. The guy got shot in the butt by his buddy as they were falling out the door. So my point is where did those other rounds go? Would they have hit my daughter, my grandchildren, somewhere at a Pizza Hut? So gun violence is going to happen. But are you ready because you have a concealed carry permit? So thank you.
Thank you. Sheriff Clegg, and I did figure out the writing. I'm sorry. So I will repeat the whole thing. What can we do about the gun violence? How can I feel safe again, going out by myself or taking my grandbabies to events? So how can I feel safe again? What can we do about gun violence?
Gun violence, I think, starts with the state's attorney and the judges. You know, many years ago, it was called three strikes and you're out. Once you've been convicted of three felonies, it's mandatory that you serve prison time. I think that's been ignored. I believe that it's all too easy, and I'm not faulting anybody on this, because the courts are overcrowded now. But Johnny, who's been convicted of a felony, gets arrested and has in his possession a stolen gun, should be looking at prison time. But instead, it's plea bargained down to a misdemeanor. Johnny goes out and does this again 2 weeks later in the same scenario, and it's pled down to a misdemeanor. How are we going to teach the criminals that there, for every action, there's a reaction? And that reaction is prison time. And I'm not saying on every case. I've sat down with Senator Weaver in my office and expressed my concerns that I think that it's not the cure, but it can help. And he is very interested to move forward and try to draft a bill with, there's some stipulations there, but anytime that there's an injury, a death, a gang member that's in possession of a gun that's defaced, a stolen gun, that is automatic prison time, that it cannot be lowered to a misdemeanor. To make it safe, I would like to think that that portion could help make it somewhat safer. I think that the person that is out walking to an event with their grandkids, they need to be aware. They need to choose a route that's safe, well-lit, well-traveled, that it's not 2 a.m. in the morning and we're walking down the street, but it's going to be at a time where there's people that are out and you're going to be seen. Thank you.
I will allow 30 seconds to respond to feeling safe going out by yourself or taking your grandchildren out to an event.
And I think some of the events that they're talking about are some that we have had here with Railroad Days. We had shootings there. Criminals are always going to get guns. If you look at some of the school shootings, those shooters got guns from their own house. Their parents either didn't secure those weapons, left them laying around, they were easily accessible. Those people need to be held accountable also. Now, whether it's criminally or civilly, I know the state of Illinois has a law that if a person leaves a gun lay around and someone gets in, a family member under the age of 14 gets into it, you can be held responsible for that. That's on the books. And whether it's practiced or not, I don't know. But it needs to be. And I agree, state's attorney's office and the judges need to pound people that are caught with weapons. So thank you.
Thank you. Sheriff Clegg, this one will go to you first. It's just a statement almost, but it's a question. What's your position of undocumented or position on undocumented people, residents, as well as cooperation with ICE?
Cooperation with ICE is once that person is brought in for a crime that he or she has committed and is undocumented, we run them through all the necessary computer work and is detained for the crime that that person has committed. At the determination of the judge that, okay, that individual is released, there's nothing other than a civil order which is not honored by law enforcement to detain that individual. Now, if they had an actual arrest warrant as opposed to a detention warrant, it's a different story. So civilly, what we're looking at is what we, law enforcement, do not really deal with. If it was a criminal arrest warrant for that detainee, that's a little bit different. A lot of times in the past, I know that ICE has been notified, and they've never shown up. Now, granted, one person versus how many up in Chicago or how many in St. Louis, but it's frustrating, and I think that that is the problem that a lot of departments are experiencing, that if you cooperate, they still don't show up. So I think the long run is that once that individual is allowed to be released from jail, and if the ICE has issued a detainer warrant, which is a civil process, that individual's free to go. Thank you.
Mr. Canfield, same question. Your position on undocumented, position of undocumented residents and cooperation with ICE.
Okay. Law enforcement can only do what the law allows them to do. So, just an undocumented person with no criminal activity, I don't even know if here locally we would even come across something like that, the normal street deputy or street police, because they're normal citizens. They just move about and do their thing. Now, when you cross the line and become criminal, you're not really brought in because you're an undocumented resident. You're brought in because you did something criminal. So ICE has a huge task on their hands, and we're probably never going to see them here, even if we do call them. So an undocumented person walking the street, causing no problems, probably will never get approached, and that's okay. But, like I said, cross the line and become criminal, then you have to answer for that issue. Thank you.
Thank you. This would go to you first, Mr. Canfield. Does the Sheriff's Department have officers trained to help victims of sexual assault, and do we need more personnel dedicated to sexual assault victims?
Well, every law enforcement officer now has to go through sexual assault victim training and how to respond to them. It's part of what's coming up through the state. Whether it's been mandated because of Ferguson or whether it's been mandated by the training board, every officer has to go through that. So, yes, every officer will ultimately be trained in how to respond to sexual assault victims. And right now, maybe every deputy in the Knox County Sheriff's Department has already received that training. It is mandated. You have to go through it. So whether everybody is or not, I don't know. But I know that the training is mandatory, and it will at least catch everybody. So thank you.
Sheriff Clegg, same question. Does the Sheriff's Department have officers trained to help victims of sexual assault, and do we need more personnel dedicated to sexual assault victims?
The answer is yes, we do have officers, deputies that are trained for sexual assault. Plus, it's mandated. Every year it's mandated for every officer to go to this special type of class. And I think it's very, very worthy, and it'd be great if we had 50 officers, because I'd like to have all 50 of them certified to do that. But the answer is yes, we do have.
So the next question says, so all police cars have dash cams? Question mark.
Sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sheriff's Department, yes. And, you know, it was one of those things that brought to my attention several years back where a Rock Island deputy was involved in a shooting at a traffic stop. And, you know, as I'm sitting there watching it on the television, I'm thinking, had it not been for that screen or that in-car camera, there would have been a lot of questions raised by prosecutor and by the defense, by the jury, and what better way to nix any concerns or issues than to have something on a video right in front of you. So we instituted that. It's just not only oncoming and vehicles. There's cameras in the back for the prisoners. There's a camera focused right down to the control of lights, sirens, your radio, your computer. And the unique thing with the in-car camera, dash cameras, is that once it hits a certain speed, they come on automatically. And even if you don't hit that certain speed and you've got your red lights, it automatically is on. So it's been a great help in regards to accidents involving squad cars, which unfortunately the deer is what we're looking at majority of the time. And we've always found that the deer was at fault. So.
Thank you. All right, last question from the audience. This will go to you first, Mr. Canfield. If a citizen needs to speak with you regarding possible issues with your department, issues and your department, how was that made possible?
Well, the sheriff's office is open 24 hours. Now, you may not get me within those 24 hours, but you'll get somebody that you can speak with. The sheriffs usually work day shift. You want to stop in at any time during that time. If I'm not in the building, leave a message. I'll call you back. I'll get back with you. I believe in an open door policy, and if somebody wants to stop in, we can talk. One thing I don't like is people who come in and know the sheriff's there and get no response. That won't happen if I'm elected. So thank you.
Sheriff Clegg, if a citizen needs to speak with you regarding possible issues in your department, how is that made possible?
I, too, have an open door policy. If I am there and I'm unable to speak to that person that's in the lobby, it's typically because there's something else going on. So having said that, if that individual comes in just to address a minor complaint, we listen. I listen. If there is something that has occurred, say responding to shots fired and this wasn't done, that wasn't done, it is typically then that individual is referred to see the captain who oversees the patrol and investigations, of which he will report back to me as to what the findings are, and then we'll sit down eventually and let that person know what came of his question or concern.
Thank you. The last question, the second last question. If the needs of, and this will go to you first, Sheriff Clegg, if the needs for a county law enforcement, thank you. If the needs for the county law enforcement outstrip the budgetary resources of the county, how would you resolve that gap?
Well, there's really no resolution other than there would have to come a point in time where people are laid off, which, as I've said to the county board, I will never make that announcement. It will come from the county board, because the county board's concern is no different than mine, is public safety. And I think there's minimal revenue that's generated through the federal inmates. We generate about $340,000 a year. There's money that's generated through forfeitures. There's money that's generated through impounds that we can utilize some of that money to help offset the cost, and hopefully it wouldn't be much more than a month or a month and a half, to maintain the number of deputies that would be on the road. Because right now we're at bare minimum. And to lay anybody off, I cringe to even think of that. So,
thank you. Mr. Canfield? If the needs for county law enforcement outstrip the budgetary resources or of the county, how would you resolve that gap?
Before you even think about personnel layoffs, there's a lot of things you can start stripping down, and one is you keep a vehicle a year longer. You get them serviced. Uniform may not get replaced. It can be patched. Before you think about the citizens, the taxpayers, being the victim because there's one less personnel on the road, but they look good in their uniform, that's where you can start to remove burden and extra funds. You can look at that well before you get to the point of laying people off. You would hope that taxes wouldn't have to go up, but sometimes with public safety and you want to feel safe, sometimes some of those things have to be done. But until that, personnel are the very last thing that will go. We can do a lot of chopping on a lot of different things before we get to that point. So thank you.
Thank you. Let's give both of our candidates for sheriff a round of applause. All righty. Now we will have closing statements, and we will start with you, Mr. Canfield. Okay. 2 minutes.
Well, thank you. When I decided to make this run for sheriff, I was approached by a couple friends and thought, no way, not doing it. I'm comfortable where I'm at. As this thing started snowballing, we started meeting people, we started hearing things. We've met with people in their house who have lost loved ones. Whether I win or lose, you can't change those relationships that were built during this run. Now, I have no experience in the Knox County Sheriff's Department, but I have 35 years of law enforcement experience, whether it's international, whether it's here locally. I know how to run budgets, I know how to command, and I know how to lead. So what I'm asking is for your vote on November 6th. So thank you.
Thank you. Sheriff Clegg.
Well, I believe your Knox County Sheriff's Department today is a very, very professional organization compared to where we were 12 years ago. And I think you'll see a huge and dramatic change for the better for public safety. As an administrator, I have an excellent staff to assist in overseeing the day-to-day operations. I'm a certified law enforcement officer, and I, too, possess an ultra-high clearance and have used it within the last year. due to my work and experience with the National Joint Terrorism Task Force, I do have concerns locally, of which deputies check on daily and report of any findings. So far, there has been none. But there are concerns, especially when you have the second world's largest railroad yards within your back door. All of this said, I'm very proud to say I am the sheriff of your Knox County Sheriff's Department. I've been your sheriff for the past 11 years, and with your vote, it'll be my honor and privilege to continue to serve you as the best sheriff of Knox County. Thank you.
Thank you. So one, want to thank both of our candidates, Sheriff Clegg, Mr. Canfield, so thank you so much. Our panelists, Robert Connolly with the Registered Mail, Brittany Grimes representing the NAACP, Rebecca Sosmarski representing the Registered Mail as well, the Gillsburg Public Library Director Zach Holt, Jane Easterly, thank you so much for letting us use your facilities, WGIL, thanks so much for being here, Tom, and broadcasting the people, the viewers, whether you're doing Facebook Live or just watching or listening on the radio, thank you so much for tuning in. The audience, absolutely, thank you for being courteous. Thank you for being civil. And, of course, Registered Mail, Tom, thank you so much for the partnership. So as a reminder, please, please, please exercise your right to vote. It doesn't matter where your political ideology, who you're voting for, please, please vote. As a reminder, Election Day is Tuesday, November the 6th, but guess what? You can vote early. You can vote right now. You can vote at the city election office, which is right next, I don't know where I am, but it's next door, 55 West Tompkins Street. So, again, please get out there and vote. Thank you so much for tonight, and have a great evening. Thank you.